Lifting his head toward the stars, a child Baron looked into the infinite blackness of the universe with knowing eyes.
They're coming. By the blood of my fathers, I can almost see them moving through the night.
Baron Harmon flexed his fingers in the chill air, trying to touch the intangible. A dozen people stood on the roof of the Baron's house, a pre-dark bank converted into a formidable fortress. The walls were draped with sandbags, the windows covered by wooden shutters and iron bars. A high defensive wall of adobe brick studded with glass surrounded the desertville, and armed sekmen walked along the white top, always on patrol against muties and coldhearts. Down among the many homes, cooking fires made the curtained windows glow warmly red, and there was a rich smell in the air of frying fish, sassafras tea, and baked taters. Standing close to the small boy, the adults waited patiently to hear more. At first, many of the people had resisted having a muti as a baron, but soon the obvious military advantages of having a dumi plan out the defenses against an enemy that hadn't even arrived yet was clear to all. The young baron would have them digging new wells before the old ones went dry, and warned of acid rainstorms days early. The isolated ville still existed only because of his advance warnings, which always came true. The sekmen would die at his command, and the civvies all but worshipped the child as a god. The ville's sect chief wiped his mouth with the back of a hand.
And what should we do about that, my lord?
There was something in the air. Everyone could feel it. The cropland and hills outside the ville were too quiet this night. There didn't seem to be anything else alive in the world except the tiny ville. Only the western Mohawk Mountain seemed normal, the jagged peaks framed by the rolling banks of fiery clouds that blanketed them every night.
What direction are they?
Chief Bateman rested a hand on the grip of the weapon at his side. A double-barrel scatter gun had been cut down to just large enough to fit into a holster. The sec chief carried it instead of a hand cannon, and the notches on the wooden grip weren't decorations, but the tally of the chills he had made with the blaster. Unable to put the feeling into words, Baron Harmon turned to face the southeast section of the zone. The one-eyed man and the time walker, they were in that direction. With two brothers, no? Two sons? But that made no sense. The Dumi Baron shook his head, trying to dispel the confusion. Everything was in flux. It was always difficult to clear see into the future, but now it was pure chaos, as if the universe were unraveling. Had time come undone? Was the casement of reality cracked apart? Could this be the second apocalypse? Chief Bateman stepped closer.
Sir?
The Baron turned away from the south and scowled at the north.
They're coming. Four gnomes on coal-black steeds. One is tall. One cannot speak well. One is large as a bear. And the last carries death in his sleeves. They had different fathers, but consider themselves blood brothers.
I'll sound the alarm.
Do nothing. There is nothing we can do. At least, there is nothing we can do at the moment. But soon, very soon.
Shivering from the icy thoughts forming in his mind, the Baron turned away from the blood-soaked desert. Was it blood-soaked, or was that another hallucination? He started toward the wooden flight of rusty iron steps that led down the side of the pre-dark bank. Death was coming from the north and the south. This was where the future would be forged anew. Many would be killed, he could see it, almost hear the screams. But afterward, the world would be forever altered. Hugging their long blasters, the sekmen formed a tight group around the child baron as he wearily walked to the paved street of the ville. A group of workers were patching a large hole in the ground in front of the gate, sprinkling sharp pieces of glass into the crude concrete for unknown reasons. But orders were orders, and nobody questioned the dictates of the Baron. Nodding satisfaction at the work, Harmon shuffled back to his bed, and hopefully, a long and dreamless sleep. Tugging on his droopy mustache, Sec Chief Bateman stayed on the wall. Red dust he hated waiting. But when it was time to act, their Baron would say so. Then his army of sekmen would unleash all kinds of hell. Until then, they could only wait and prepare for war. At Tucsonville, Ryan and the other companions quickly gathered their blasters as Baron O'Connor snatched a lever-action Winchester from the gun rack on the wall. The carrying strap was lined with loops full of brass that shone greasy and golden in the light of the alcohol lanterns, the hollow point lead tips a smooth gray satin. Flipping the long blaster over by its hinged lever on the bottom, O'Connor chambered around and caught the weapon in his waiting palm.
Let's go!
Simone slid closer to her mother.
Are we in danger, Father?
Of course not. This is just one of their silly drills. I've always
said... Shut up, bitch! You will be quiet, or the last thing I ever do will be to throw you naked to the muties myself.
The Baron raised the Winchester high, as if he were going to strike the woman. Going pale, the trembling woman dropped the food and went very still in her chair. She could see in the Baron's face the man meant what he said.
Triple red, people.
Ryan rose from his chair and drew the Sig Sauer to check the clip. As the companions checked their weapons, Sterling went to the nearest window and threw the wooden shutters open wide. The Ville spread out below in shadowy peace. Everything looked fine. Then he noticed the Sekhmen on the wall scurrying like beetles. He could hear an alarm bell ringing from the direction of the front gate, but there was no sign of a fire or the headlights of an invading army of Coldhearts. Sterling squinted into the darkness.
Something is happening, that's for sure. I just don't see anything wrong.
No signs of blaster fire.
The Baron leaned halfway out of another window. Caldfield was still sitting at the table, his gun belt hanging from the back of his chair.
Maybe it's a mistake.
Standing guard near the door, Taylor gave the man a look of disgust that could have broken concrete.
Nuke that shit. My troops don't ring the alarm bell for a bar fight. Blood of my fathers, what I wouldn't give for a pair of binocs.
Here you go.
As the Sec Chief turned, JB threw him the Navy telescope. Sterling made the catch and extended the collapsible device to its full length and started sweeping the landscape.
Where did you get that?
Not bothering to reply, Ryan worked the bolt action on his Steyr SSG-70 and joined the big man at the window. Bringing up the long blaster, Ryan squinted through the telescopic sight. The optics of the pre-dark scope were nowhere near as powerful as the antique Navy telescope, but still better than nothing. 5 stories below, people were pouring from their homes, huts, and ramshackle houses in various stages of undress. But every one of them carried a weapon of some sort, a blaster, a crossbow, longbow, knife, or axe. On the wall, the Sekhmen were pelting along, fixing bayonets onto the end of their long blasters, or ripping open plastic boxes full of Molotov cocktails. More and more torches were being lit, along with dozens of lanterns. With the MP5 in hand, Christie joined Ryan at the window and looked out into the night. Her hair was still agitated, ruffling and moving against the breeze coming in through the window. Something was wrong. Something triple bad. But what the hell was happening?
Something strange is going on in the zone. First that jump at the redoubt and then the armed stickies.
Checking his blaster, Taylor perked up his ear at that. Aunt Christie went silent. The man had to have had unusually sharp hearing to have caught her words. No wonder he was a scout.
Damn. Maybe it is all a mistake.
Just then, a motion in the scope caught Ryan's attention, and he leaned farther out of the window. A spark floated in the darkness, a firefly moving above the Ville, flying through the air. The jot of light rose and fell, bobbing and moving seemingly at random. But as Ryan's vision became adjusted to the darkness, he could see the dim outline of the greenhouses. Somebody was running along the top of the greenhouses carrying a torch. He grimaced. No, something was sprinting across the sloping glass as if it were level ground.
Baron, you may have waited too long. See there? I think the stickies are now hunting you.
Well, blast it! Shoot it, I say! That fancy long blaster of yours should be able to ace that thing from here!
Yes, it should. But we don't want that. Not yet.
For a long moment, O'Connor stared in barely controlled rage at his Sec Chief, but then slowly nodded.
Smart. Dangerous, but if it works...
Yeah. If.
Ripping the napkin from around his neck, the grim Baron strode back to the table.
Amelia, get into the safe room. Take Catherine and the others with you. Lock the door and wait for me. Don't leave until I personally say so.
Do you really think that it's wise?
But the Baron was already at a gun rack on the wall. He took down a Browning, the carrying strap lined with ammo loops full of fat brass.
Here.
O'Connor passed her the autofire.
Now move!
Wordlessly, Lady Amelia looked at her husband, then took the long blaster and led the others from the dining hall. Only Caldfield stayed, strapping on a gun belt and fumbling with the hand cannon in the holster.
I'll stay with them.
Caulfield checked the load in the wheel gun. The brewmaster was no sec man, but had grudgingly done his share of chilling over the years. O'Connor returned to the gun rack.
No, you stay with me.
Taylor half turned toward the door.
My lord, should I make sure they're safe?
Stuffing a box of brass into his pocket, the Baron nodded as he picked up the Winchester once more.
Do it. However, nobody goes near my family but me. Savvy?
Giving a brief salute, the scout slipped out of the dining hall, as quiet as a knife in the night. Returning to the window, Ryan tried to find the shambling figure again, but the firefly was gone. Had it only been a trick of the light?
No. There it was again. A sticky running along the roof of the greenhouses, jumping from one to the next, carrying a burning torch. Not just a stick on fire, but a bastard torch with a thick wad of flaming material on the end. Sterling lowered the telescope.
Sons of bitches know how to get fire now. If that thing sets the barracks ablaze, the armory could catch. There's enough black powder and brass there to blow this entire ville off the nuking map.
With a tense expression, Christie looked hopefully at the skylight.
Maybe the rain would stop the fire?
If it comes in time.
Jack's ruby eyes could see clearly in dim light, but the sticky had gone into hiding somewhere. The torch was nowhere to be seen on the roof of the greenhouses. Impatiently, Jack shrugged his shoulders, checking the position of the knives hidden up his sleeves. They could save the ville by attacking, but waiting was the only way to protect the ville from further attacks. On the wall, nervous sec-men were firing into the night, the muzzle flashes of the black powder weapons sending out bright yellow daggers of flame. More sec-men raced along the streets, checking every alleyway, the bayonets on their blasters reflecting the torchlight like slivers of fire.
Tell me, is the armory where you have the refinery? The place where you make the fuel for the war wag and the Molotovs?
Don't know what you're talking about.
Mildred looked directly at the man.
What comes out first is best.
Whatever they were using to make fuel in there, that statement should hold true. The most volatile compounds would be the first to distill. That was just basic chemistry, although that was mighty close to wizardry in these unenlightened days. Dropping his jaw, the brewmaster recoiled from her statement as if physically struck.
Who are you people?
Your allies.
JB worked the bolt on the Uzi. Every blaster was aimed at the brewmaster. Ever so slowly, Caulfield raised both hands, his palms turned outward.
Allies. Yes, of course. Sorry, I just... A reflex, you understand?
The Baron brandished the Winchester.
Caulfield, go get the Metro running, and pass out all the spare Molotovs we have. We'll meet you at the gate.
As you command, my lord.
The brewmaster hurried from the room.
You really know how to make juice, Mildred?
It's simple, really.
Good. Then I don't need that shit-brain Caulfield anymore.
Saying nothing, Ryan looked at Christie. If the Baron figured that out, then so had the brewmaster. Could be trouble coming that way. Good thing Taylor was guarding the Baron's family. A Coldheart had once gotten control of Front Royal by seizing the pregnant wife of the Baron. That had turned into a real bloodbath. Hopefully, that scenario wasn't going to be repeated here.
Okay, let's go hunting.
Baron O'Connor started for the door. He knew the danger of getting caught outside in a storm if the acid rain came, but there was always a telltale reek of chems first that would give them a few minutes' warning. Among the ruins, there would be plenty of places to find safety, at least from the rain anyway. They might also get trapped in the sticky nest, but that was a chance the Baron was willing to take to rid his ville of the lethal muties forever. Suddenly, the firefly appeared again, zigzagging along the side of the greenhouses, the sticky moving parallel to the ground. Ryan rested his elbow on the windowsill and adjusted the focus on the telescopic sight.
Move! I'll meet you at the gate! First, I have to stop that nuke sucker.
Follow me!
The Baron charged into the hallway. In a ragged formation, everybody left with the Baron, except for Christie. She knew that the rapid fire and her revolver didn't have the range to reach the sticky. Only the Steyr could kill it from here. But she wasn't going to leave Ryan alone with nobody to guard his six. Sweeping the darkness with the crosshair scope, Ryan found the firefly once more and tried to get a bead on the racing mutie. Unfortunately, its natural shamble made it difficult to target, and the lack of decent light wasn't helping any either. He had to stop the creature from reaching the armory, but not by killing it. That was the key to finding the nest. If he could simply chase the mutie away, it might lead them straight back home to the nest. Hopefully. However, to nick it in the leg was a hard shot, even with good light and a stationary target. But there didn't seem to be any other choice. Until...
Maybe if you shot the glass, Ryan.
Good idea, lover.
Ryan shifted his aim from the moving sticky and onto the roof of the greenhouse. Stroking the trigger of the Steyr, he sent a 7.62mm round into the glass, and a panel shattered. Startled, the sticky jerked back from the explosion. On the streets and wall, nobody glanced up at the blaster shot from the Citadel. Hesitantly, the confused mutie started forward again, and Ryan took out another panel. Then three more in rapid succession, as fast as he could work the bolt.